catalyst for massive resistance to integration in the South was the Brown versus Board Education decision by the Supreme Court in 1954. But before that, sensing that the court would not go their way, segregationists in the South, state lawmakers began to be, I guess you could say, proactive, anticipating the worst.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, interestingly enough, Herman Talmadge in the state of Georgia, who was an arch segregationist, but also very savvy, began to upgrade black schools in the early 50s. So you couldn't say it's separate and unequal, saying, well, we actually have a genuinely equal system. So there are all these schools that are called equalization schools that were quite nice facilities built for in black communities in the very early 1950s.
And also, I think the General Assembly in 53 passed an amendment that was going to privatize public schools.
That's right. And then again, certainly after Brown, numerous other pieces of legislation designed to thwart desegregation by any means necessary, up to and including actually closing down the public schools altogether. It's a real possibility.
So in 1956, Southern lawmakers in Congress get together and they issue a document called the Southern Manifesto.
That's right. And Richard Russell of Georgia was one of the architects of it. Again, defying, basically expressing the spirit of massive resistance and saying that the Brown decision would be challenged, you know, by any means necessary up until, including the public schools. So you have this atmosphere, hard to imagine today, well, maybe not given the polarization we have today, but of extreme polarization, where there was basically extreme reaction to the Brown decision in the South and sort of no place for a middle zone. And it comes to a head, of course, in Little Rock, Arkansas in the fall of 1957 when Governor Orville Faubus of Arkansas has Arkansas National Guard being there at the gates of Central High School. And President Eisenhower calls out, you know, federal troops, the 82nd Airborne, to escort these nine students into Little Rock Central High. So you have this incredible scene that's seen widely in the media of what massive resistance might lead to. It might lead to actually armed conflict with troops, you know, involved as nine children are trying to desegregate a previously all-white high school.
And it's shown a light, a national spotlight on the bad behavior, if you will, of not only the troops, but the white
segregationists
mob that was against the nine students being admitted to the school.
So and hurling epithets and curses and chasing down black reporters and, you know, just an ugly, ugly, ugly scene. The first of a number of scenes that we'll see at that time. And in response, a number of Protestant ministers and aided and abetted by Jewish rabbi Jacob Rothschild of the Temple issued a statement that kind of said, let's put the brakes on this. It was a moderate expression. It was one of the very first sort of moderate expressions by people in some position of authority against massive resistance.
This becomes sort of typical for Atlanta, doesn't it, as the civil rights movement evolves in that when they see what's going on in Arkansas and then Birmingham, Atlanta's like, whoa, wait a minute. We don't want that happening here.
That's right. I mean, school desegregation here was relatively peaceful, even though relatively token, previous year 1960, everybody had seen in New Orleans a six-year-old child, Ruby Bridges, being escorted by federal marshals while insults were being hurled on her in New Orleans. And, you know, Atlanta, very much image conscious. Mayor Hartsfield had coined the phrase, the city too busy to hate. So, yes, this minister's manifesto, about 80 Protestant ministers calling for, basically, let's respect the law of the land. Let's keep the public schools open. Let's act in a decent sort of manner. Let's remember the First Amendment rights. Let's treat people civilly. Let's engage in some interracial dialogue. By today's standards, a very kind of modest document, but for the time in the place, a pretty bold and important intervention in a sense.
But the clergy draws a line between integration and amalgamation.
They don't draw a line. They say it is unfortunate that the term integration has been brought into this discussion because integration conveys amalgamation of the races, race mixing, including interracial sex, you know, a deep, deep, deep fear. And so they say it's an unfortunate term that was injected into all of this because that's what it conveys is racial amalgamation.
And the ministers were against that.
They said, we are not in favor of race mixing. That's right. I mean, it's again, they don't actually criticize the system of segregation, and they certainly don't advocate desegregation, but they say, let's be more civil, let's obey the law of the land, let's have some interracial dialogue, let's respect the rights of all Americans, black and white. You know, so it's a voice of moderation, if you will.
Let's remove the mob part of resistance.
That's right. And perhaps create some room in the middle where we can talk about things.
You mentioned Jacob Rothschild, the rabbi of the temple in Atlanta, did not sign this because he was Jewish and the minister's manifesto were all Christian clergy.
That's right. He was involved in the framing of it, though, and again, desisted from signing it because of its Christian orientation. Rothschild had been a pretty strong, outspoken proponent for civil rights, and the following year, less than a year later, in October 1958, the temple, his synagogue, was bombed itself. It led to a subsequent minister's manifesto, this time signed by over 300 white ministers of the city.
There is that link there between the bombing of the temple and the minister's manifesto in a way, because Rothschild actually wrote an op-ed in the Atlanta paper saying he was in favor of it.
That's right.
And essentially when he did that, I think it put a target on his back, didn't it?
That's right. And remember, along with these more moderate expressions, you also had more extreme expressions as well. You had a group of violent men already, you know, having organized now for over a decade in the post-World War II South, engaged in bombings and violent kinds of resistance. And then some of these folks undoubtedly were the people who bombed the temple in 1958.
Well, Cliff Keane, thank you.
Thanks, Steve.